Blog Talk Radio.
911, what's your emergency?
I called a little bit ago. The deputy sheriff's not here. I found out my granddaughter has been taken. She has been missing for a month. Her mother finally admitted that she's been missing.
Okay,
is someone here now?
Okay, what is the address that you're calling from?
We're talking about a 3-year-old little girl. My daughter finally admitted that the baby's in the store. I need to find her.
Your daughter admitted that the baby is where?
The babysitter took her a month ago that my daughter's been looking for. I told you my daughter was missing for a month. I just found her today, but I can't find my granddaughter. She just admitted to me that she's been trying to find her herself. There's something wrong. I found my daughter's car today, and it smells like there's been a dead body in the damn car.
Okay, what is the 3-year-old's name?
Kaylee. C-A-Y-L-E-E. Anthony.
Kaylee Anthony?
Yes.
Okay, is she white, black, or Hispanic?
She's white.
How long has she been missing for?
I have not seen her since the 7th of June.
What is her date of birth?
8-9-2000. Oh, gosh, she's 2005. George Kane, listen.
Welcome to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Barr, and tonight, live from Orlando, Florida, we recap week 5 of the Casey Anthony trial. Tonight's guest will be taking your calls. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and click tonight's show. Some of our panel is actually in the chat room, so they'll answer some questions in there for you as well. Tonight's guests include Dr. Lillian Glass, communications and body language expert, Orlando criminal defense attorney Eric Dubois, Steph Watts, investigative reporter covering the case, and we also have Steve Helling from People Magazine. Welcome to all of our guests this evening, and welcome to all of our listeners and chat room guests. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us again. And Steve, welcome to the show for the first time. Let's start with you. Holy cow. I'm always lost for words when we start this show. What a week in the courtroom. In brief, what is the latest?
Well, you know, obviously we started off last week without anything exciting happening. Then all of a sudden Cindy Anthony took the stand, said that she had searched for chloroform. Then we had Lee Anthony take the stand, talking about the stains in the car and his angst at not being around for Kaylee's birth. And then we had that bizarre incident yesterday where suddenly court was adjourned for the day. And everybody, you know, it felt very strange there in the courtroom. It felt like this might be the day that something big was going to happen, and then we were all sent home. So, you know, anything could happen in this case, and who knows what's going to happen this week.
So People Magazine came out with, what has it been, 5-6 times Kaylee or Casey have been on your front cover of People Magazine?
It's been 5 times, yes.
Five times. So Friday, 5th time, Casey's on there again. What kind of response have you been getting to the title of your story?
Well, you know, we put on the cover the question, Getting Away with Murder. And, you know, we knew it was going to be a controversial thing to say because a lot of people feel like there's no way that Casey Anthony could walk away from this. There's no way that she could not be convicted of murder. I don't necessarily believe that to be the case. Mm-hmm. Whether or not she's guilty, you know, we've seen people get convicted with a lot less evidence, and we've seen people be exonerated with more. So we could be seeing a case where she is not convicted of first-degree murder or even, you know, even manslaughter. She could get the aggravated child abuse or something lesser than like that. So we decided to go with it, and response has been very passionate is probably the right way to say it.
That's a good word for it.
This case brings out the emotion in everybody, probably because Kaylee was just such a gorgeous little girl, and, you know, that she's gone, I mean, just infuriates people, it makes them sad, whatever. And, you know, our intent is not to ever offend anyone, but kind of to look at this case in a different way. She's been convicted by everybody at this point in their mind. And, you know, these 12 jurors might not convict her. They don't know as much about this case as the rest of us.
So we would hope, you know, even though jury selection, anyone could tell you they haven't heard much about the case, but do we really know for certain that they haven't?
Well, we don't know that for certain. You know, they could have heard some, they could have heard that type of thing, but what's coming into court, you know, we're watching the news every night right now, and we're seeing the back and forth with the attorneys. We're seeing the stuff that's being thrown out. These jurors are not seeing that. So their view of the case is going to be different than any of ours at this point.
Interesting. But now, I know you work for media, mm-hmm. but wouldn't you say, though, from day one, the character of Casey Anthony has been what's been on trial, and now that we are at trial, the forensics and everything that should be there to prosecute her, we're still, like the passionate people reading your article, they're still lashing out at Casey or Cindy or George or Lee based on character and not based on factual evidence that hasn't yet been proven?
Absolutely. I think that's a very true statement. You know, Casey, let's face it, Casey is not a likable defendant. You know, when we listen to her jailhouse tapes, when we listen to her, her interactions with her parents, she isn't a warm and fuzzy type of person. And, you know, we've seen Cindy and George at their best and at their worst. And, you know, people have decided that they just don't like George and Cindy sometimes.
Hey, Michelle, Steve, this is Steph. With all due respect, I don't agree with you guys at all. I absolutely don't think her character's on trial. I think we've got to look at the facts of this case, and from what we know, you've got to remember, this girl was missing 30 days before she was reported. Let's look at that fact. Let's look at the fact that the body was found hundreds of feet away from the house. Let's look at the fact at all the lies that Casey Anthony told. So it's not just about her character, guys. It's also about some of the facts of this case that we know, that the general public knows, that is intriguing about this case. The most intriguing thing, I think everybody will agree with me, I think Eric will agree and Steve will agree, is that this child was missing 30 days, and Casey Anthony would have continued to cover it up for as long as she could until she got busted. So it ended at 30 days, but it would have gone on with her for as long as it could have.
Well, I totally
Dr. Glass, let me ask you, what do you make of it that if she had, killed her daughter when everyone says she did on the 16th of June 2008, what makes somebody stick around and just cover up a lie like that instead of just heading for the hills?
Well, she went into her own little world. It was a relief. It was a relief.
Oh,
you never see her in the courtroom crying when they bring up these horrible things about Kaylee. It's really crying about herself. This is a relief. She couldn't stand this little girl, even though you see pictures of her hugging her or, putting her on her lap or they're horsing around. She didn't like her. She wanted to get rid of her from the get-go. She wanted to have an abortion, and Cindy wouldn't let her. Then she wanted to have this little baby adopted, and Cindy wouldn't let her. And so,
Lily, it's Steph here. I just wanted to interject for a second from the experiences that I spent with them in the house. And Michelle, as you know, I was there a lot.
Right.
My take on it was Cindy loved that baby. Cindy adored
Kaylee.
No, not
Cindy. I'm talking about Casey.
No, but I'm saying Casey was jealous of the attention
Kaylee. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what happened. And so when she saw all of this attention, mm-hmm. she hated her. It's kind of like, you know, when a parent has a baby and then they have a 2-year-old at home, and that 2-year-old slaps the child or, you know, pets it nicely but just slaps it, says, "Oh, I don't like this," and then you have to teach your child, be nice to your little brother or sister. Well, that's kind of the same situation in terms of what happened in that Anthony household. Casey hated that little girl. She was jealous of her. So,
I totally disagree with that. I don't think that we're looking at we don't know what happened, but the prosecution themselves put witness after witness who said they had a special bond. They loved
Oh, sure, but who are these witnesses? Who are these witnesses? 20-year-old boys? You know,
well,
her
and also,
sister-in-law? I mean, come on.
Steve, and
you know,
I also think that this, Steve, the situation behind that family's closed doors were very different than what was in out in public. And, you know, they really
exactly.
used, you know, Cindy would definitely use that child. And people do this often, Dr. Lindglass,
oh,
I think you'll
sure.
agree with me.
Sure.
They use that person to make the other person feel terrible. She you know, would make Kaylee feel great to make Casey feel terrible because we know
exactly.
Cindy and Casey did not have a good relationship.
Oh, exactly. And then when she said, I'm going to throw you out and keep Kaylee, she was at her wit's
yeah.
end. Casey was at her wit's end. She didn't know what to do.
Michelle,
speaking of jealousy, Eric, did we lose you?
Oh, I'm here. Can you
I
hear
think
me?
We lost Eric. But
no,
Dr. Glass, speaking of jealousy, I think
yeah.
we saw a lot of that jealousy in the testimony of Lee Anthony this week. And that's
ooh, yeah.
why
yeah.
we really wanted you on the show tonight.
Whoa.
We definitely wanted you here because we want to find
hi.
Out what the heck happened with Lee Anthony on the stand.
What happened with Lee Anthony? He was putting on a show for the jury. That was what was going on. Give me a break. This guy was a take charge guy. He was kind of like the leader, the ringleader of that family besides Cindy. He was getting it all together. And when look at the initial jailhouse tapes with his sister. Look at how he took over. He high-fived her. He was so, you know, in control. And they didn't let him know about the pregnancy. Come on. Maybe they thought he had something to do with it initially. That's what came out there, you know, which they found out with the DNA that he's cleared. But maybe that was what was going on. But you saw a show for the jury. Those tears, please, please. Why cry about what he was crying about? Why not cry about, you know, he says what he thought Kaylee was not alive at the time and Jeff Ashton busted him on it. That was just ridiculous. That whole family. Cindy has brought up rage in people. Rage. When she said that she put the word chloroform and then chlorophyll and chloroform. People are not stupid and a jury is not stupid. And this will come back to haunt her. Lying on the stand is huge. And there are a lot of people out there that have watched this and have written to the judge, that have written to the court and said, listen, you've got to arrest this person or you've got to take action legally. And they've written to
let's go back to Lee for a minute first. Let's dissect him one at a time here.
Yes.
Lee, he was a grown adult at the time that Casey gave birth. What do you make of the fact that Richard Grund was in the delivery room, but Lee Anthony wasn't?
Well, Lee shouldn't have been in there, and neither should George. And if they did think that Richard Grund was you mean Jesse Grund or Richard?
No, Richard Grund. He was in the delivery room holding that baby.
That's real. Oh, that's totally odd. Unless he was,
going with that, Richard Grund is in the delivery room. You've got Lee Anthony on the stand crying out his heart that he was mad at his mom and dad for not telling them that Casey was in labor. And Richard Grund is in the delivery room. And now he was one of the witnesses in the hallway last night yesterday morning sent home. And he was going to be a defense witness. What do you make of it, Eric?
It goes to the defense's theory of a dysfunctional family. And that's the only purpose, is to show that this family was dysfunctional and they kept secrets. And when Lee Anthony was testifying, you know, whether or not the jury believes him or not is a whole different story. But when he's testifying that his mother and father didn't tell him, or his mother specifically didn't tell him that Casey was pregnant and told him basically, you know, look the other way, don't worry about it, it's none of your business, that's your little sister. And it shows dysfunction, and I think that's all the defense is trying to show is, here, this is a prime example of dysfunction. Why wasn't Lee invited to the baby shower? I know he's a guy, but it's your sister. It shows dysfunction. And I wanted to touch on something before when I got cut off. What everyone's talking about, you know, Casey didn't like Kaylee, no one's testified to that.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no testimony. Everything the jury's heard is she loved that child more than life itself.
Even the prosecution's witnesses.
Right. And there's no testimony that says, you know, she we know about that she wanted to get an abortion or was thinking about it, but that hasn't come out in front of the jury.
And that plays well, Eric, to the defense's theory that it was an accident.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So why would you put all of a sudden, you know, Cindy Anthony on the stand, who seems like she's perjuring herself, and then you get Lee on the stand going against his mom and sister and father? It's almost as if they don't know who to put on the stand. And I bring this up because, Steph, weren't you depoed and weren't you supposed – you were on the witness list for this week. What happened?
I still am on the witness list, and yes, I was depoed on Monday.
So you got then an exclusive here on Voices for Justice.
Yeah, I was told on staff, I know. Well, I'll give you quickly in a nutshell the situation with why I was depoed, and I think Eric and Steve will particularly, and Lillian will get a kick out of this. The reason why I was was on the witness list in the first place is they thought that there was statements made in front of me while I was in the backyard with Cindy Anthony regarding the ladder. There was some miscommunications, misunderstandings, or perhaps misinformation about that she had said to me that she specifically left the ladder down meaning accessible to Kaylee on the pool the day after Father's Day. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The person with me was Mark Furman. Mark Furman was the one who reported this on the air. And Eric, you'll agree with me, nobody in their right bloody mind is going to put Mark Furman on the stand in this case, this high-profile case, when Mark Furman, and I mean this with all due respect because Mark's a friend of mine, but he's the one who's blamed for, you know, what happened in the OJ case. No one's going to put Mark Furman on the stand. So they come to me and, you know, wanted to know what was said, was this said, was that said. But here's what's really interesting. During my deposition, the state went after me personally and after my actions and what I had done. Did you take George and Cindy for dinner? My answer was yes. Did you take Jose Baez for dinner? Bottom line is Jose realized in my depo from the state that they were opening up the conversation of money. And as you know, Michelle, I was with Fox News at the time, and I transitioned to ABC News Good Morning America, and we all know ABC Good Morning America paid $200,000 to the defense. I'm not releasing any information
right.
That's not already out there on the stand. So Jose realized – my point is, and Eric, you'll agree with me, I will not testify. Jose Baez will not put me on the stand because he won't open me up to cross, because we saw in the deposition where they were going to go with me, and it was going to be – personal attacks on me and personal attacks on money, what I paid for, did I pay for dinner, did I get interviews out of it? It's not going
to
happen.
Well wait a second, Steph. I think I read many blogs where it said that you and me and Caitlin Fulmer, who was with GMA at the time,
right.
We all flitted the bill at the Ritz Hotel and were treated to a steak dinner and everything.
No, we didn't.
I don't think
morning,
I would have done
America
that.
Paid for that. And Good Morning America paid for that. Listen, on the, you know, it's no big deal. Good Morning America paid for that. That's how it goes. And I'd love to hear from Eric and see what he thinks after what I just said.
I'd like to see somebody put Dominic Casey on the stand and dispute that fact, because he's the one that threw that theory out there that I paid for the bill in his deposition or statement to police, which I find really, really ironic. I am waiting for the day that he's on the stand.
Is Dominic Casey going on the stand? Because he should be on the stand.
He's on the witness list, but I haven't seen him yet.
Long story short, they were going to try to use me to continually muddy the waters of you know, what happened. And you know what? It's just
that's ridiculous.
Become part of this circus. I'd love to be
ridiculous.
Well, circus is an understatement for this this drama going on in there. There's a lot of clowns. Don't get me wrong, but Eric, what do you make of what happened on Saturday? That all of a sudden they just up and the judge, who wanted, you know, court all day till 3:30 that day, decided to close up shop until Monday.
Well, it's pure speculation, but whatever it is huge. You had a hallway full of witnesses who were ready, willing, and able to testify. if it, you know, the judge said it wasn't an issue regarding the witness that was brought up earlier. You know, there are other witnesses. He wants to move this trial. You got the July 4th holiday, you know, a week away. I think either it's a number of things. It could be prosecutorial misconduct with regards to Mr. Rodriguez's testimony and him all of a sudden being told you can't testify. And if that's the case and the judge declares a mistrial, they may be barred from
trying. I don't see him doing that. I do not see him doing a mistrial on the fact of
he's been
the jury's biggest fan.
But here's why I don't think it's that. Because the judge could have said, you know what, I've got a hallway full of witnesses. Yuri Melich is out there, the canine operators. We're going to go through their
John
testimony.
Allen, Richard Grun,
and I'm here
Jim
now
Hoover.
issuing an order that Mr. Rodriguez and his superiors are in my courtroom on Monday morning at 8:30 to examine this whole issue. And he could have moved on with the case.
That's true.
But I don't think it's that. Is it one of the defense attorneys saying, I'm done, I don't agree with the route this is going? Or Casey saying, you know what, I don't want, after seeing that whole explosion, saying, I don't want Jose Baez as my lead attorney anymore? I don't know.
Interesting.
That's not what Cheney said to Jean Cassar.
That wasn't the body language. That wasn't the body language that I saw.
But why was she crying?
You know, one of the things well, that was interesting. And I did see George cry, too. George was a complete pot mess, I mean, throughout the whole thing. He was breathing heavily, looking up. They said he had a Bible in his hand. He was looking down, reading. He was hyperventilating. I mean, something was going on there
Another option is, has the state raised an issue of going after Cindy for perjury and figuring out a way, what are we going to do now with all this testimony? Because you can't unring the bell in front of the jury. The jury's heard it.
I don't know if that would have been it either. I felt like maybe one of two things, because of the cast of characters out in the hallway to be on the stand. I almost think it has something to do with the fact that Yuri Milich left out pertinent information on phone records that was given to the prosecution and the defense, and even Jeff Ashton stated, I gave you exactly what we were given. And so I'm almost thinking that there are phone records to show where Crunk and who Crunk called that were left out of evidence, or somebody from the family or somewhere else may have opted to take responsibility for some stuff.
But why would this judge, who people are saying it's the Judge Perry Express, trying to get this thing done, you know, before the July 4th holiday, not put that stuff and say, we'll deal with this after today's testimony. I've got a jury of 17 people sitting in a back room who have been sequestered. Mm-hmm. Let's get through the witnesses that we can get through and address this issue in court.
Later.
At 3:30.
Eric, this is Steph. I agree with you. He's what I call jury concerned, very concerned about the jury, respects that they're being sequestered. He's the only one. And all that's happening in the eyes of this jury is they're getting pissed off at both sides because they're keeping them there longer, and it's a huge mistake. You've got to sequester jury, get through your case quickly, close your case quickly. You're going to have the jury on your side.
And let's not forget, during jury selection, a number of the jurors that are sitting on as jurors or as alternates said, I've got July 4th plans.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes to the jury on Thursday.
Right.
That favors, in my opinion,
Steve knows that favors the defense.
Because they're going to want to, let's just make a decision and let's get out of here. You know, you got some going first degree, some going, manslaughter. Let's just give her manslaughter and get home for 4th of July.
And you know what? And I agree with you, Eric. And when you squeeze a jury, and I've seen this a million times as you have, you squeeze them on a Friday, you get a light verdict. They're done. They're like, I'm not going to.
I mean, the prosecution took, 18 days of testimony?
Right. Here's what the defense has only had five.
But let's not forget, Judge Perry is a former prosecutor. He knows defense attorney's tricks, and he's been a judge for years. Something major happened for him to say, we're going to delay this a day.
Yeah, but Eric, he's reprimanded the state just as much as he's reprimanded Baez. He said you guys are both playing games here.
I'm not saying he's taking one side or another. I don't think he would have allowed the defense to come up with something to stall and lose a whole 7-8 hours of testimony
right.
to have them push it further and further back. Because on Friday
right.
they said, look,
it's something big.
It's huge. Whatever it is, it's huge. And I think, you know, the defense attorneys all walked down. They said, we'll see you Monday. Jeff Ashton was doing a deposition Saturday afternoon. There's no plea deal. I mean, people that are speculating it's a plea, I don't think it's a plea. But something
state's
happened.
Not gonna, the state, no, the state's not going to take a plea. There's no way. They're not even going to consider it.
Right.
Not even an issue. The
but
case
I go back.
Strong.
I just go back to why was Casey Anthony crying when she came back into the courtroom? And did the state say they're going after Cindy? And from what I've heard, and obviously I wasn't in the courtroom, but people said that they could hear Chaney Mason raising his voice in the judge's chambers on Saturday
mm-hmm.
morning.
That's what I was told, too.
What would
I mean,
be yelling about?
You know, everybody, it's so interesting to see. I've never in all my years of covering cases seen and everybody throw everybody under the bus. Either this family is completely divided and throwing under the bus, or this is the greatest act I've ever seen on a family coming together to try to save another family member's life. I can't figure out which one it is, but I don't believe it's the latter.
You know, I was wondering if it had anything to do with George, because I have never seen him that out of his skin. One of the things that Baez said is he, you know, he asked the DNA expert if Lee, you know, if, was the father in essence, but he didn't ask about George. So, you know, even though that, it sounds bizarre, but, you know, that may be an issue too. I don't
well,
know.
Well, wouldn't, if Lee's DNA came back as negative, wouldn't George's? Because of the paternal?
No. Not necessarily. Not necessarily.
But I would think there'd be enough markers where they would have said, we got to test someone else because this is a little
I agree.
Suspicious.
Well, you know, just the fact that with the molestation charge and whatever, just to even cause doubt, I would think, created George to have such a horrible body language reaction. I mean, it was just
and, you know, one of the witnesses indicated that.
Dr. Lillian Glass, I love you to death.
Yes.
This is Steph. I've known you for years, but there was no molestation charge. It was a molestation allegation. Let's be really clear
on
that.
I'm sorry, not charge.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, not charge. Excuse me. My bad. Absolutely.
I love you to death.
I love you, too. No, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Thank
what
you.
About
I'll get away
oh,
with
no, I didn't mean that. I misspoke. But I just seen, I mean, I was in pain watching him. I mean, his eyes bulged out. He looked up. He was like praying. It was so devastating to watch. And what was even more devastating is Cindy was ignoring him. She's
hey,
talking
Michelle.
To somebody like there was nothing going
yeah.
on.
Hey, Steve's on the phone if you can patch him back through.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Oh, okay.
I see.
We miss Steve. People magazine,
I know, he
man.
Got cut off. I have two callers on from 407. I know that Steve and Eric were one of them.
Right.
Anybody else on the line? Okay. I'll patch him through as soon as I see that he's called in. Yeah.
George huffing and puffing and looking up because he knows Cindy was lying and the state knows that she was lying and he's now in fear of losing his daughter going to jail and possibly his wife?
Well, and don't forget the affair just came out in the press as well, the alleged affair.
Right. Hey, Michelle. Hey, Michelle. Steve's phone number is 5051.
Okay, thanks.
Michelle, the alleged affair, we're talking about River Cruz, correct?
Isn't she go by Holloway, too?
Yes.
Well, whatever. I spoke to her directly. I had written a blog last year that I thought she showed credibility when she talked about the affair. There were a lot of signs that she did not show signals of deception, and so I put it out there in a blog. Well, she called me personally to thank me for it, and we had a very, very long communication, and she went into detail about her relationship with George. Sounded credible to me.
But do you find it odd that somebody that embedded themselves into a situation would be doing a lot of media and representation?
Not at all.
And does
not
she look
all.
Like somebody that could cut a check for $20,000?
She didn't. It wasn't $20,000. It was a few thousand. What happened was she did not want to get involved. She saw him at the grocery store where the command post was, and she basically wanted to help. find Kaylee, because she has children of her own, and she felt really bad. He came after her, according to her, and they ended up having this affair together. He didn't have a lot of money. He was crying poor mouth at the time, saying he didn't even have money for groceries. So that's why she coughed up some money for him, and it was just a few thousand dollars.
Steve, what do you make of that?
Can you hear me, first of all?
I hear you now.
Oh, thank goodness. Okay, I
Steve,
didn't hear that.
Steve, we missed you.
Well, I missed you guys, too. I do need to clarify a couple things, because I was in that courtroom when everything was canceled. Chaney Mason was not raising his voice. Chaney Mason was laughing. I could hear him laughing with his big, blustery laugh in the judge's chambers. So there was no raising of voices. And the judge was very easygoing, he seemed to be in a good mood. He didn't seem to be at all concerned about losing a day's worth of testimony, which is fascinating because he's been pushing this along. So I know that it's been like a game of telephone, and I've heard many times that that voices were raised. That's not true. That's not what I heard.
Well, thank you for clarifying.
Interesting. And for our callers that want to ask our panel questions, the number is 347-838-8622. When you call in, please make sure that you're in queue for the host so I know that you have a question, because we have a lot of people listening on cell phones, driving, et cetera, that are just listening to the show. And the caller from 309 area code, if you call back in, we'll patch you through. So he was laughing. And, see, that's how – I'm not a body language expert either, but I definitely didn't think that if he was upset at Baez or their client decided to, say, take a hike, that they would be walking out together and smiling.
Exactly.
And not only that, I am in contact with the defense team, and I have spoken to somebody on the defense team. They say it's not a big deal. Granted, the defense team says a lot of things, but at this point, I'm not willing to think that it's anything huge until I hear it, in open court.
One thing,
and do you think you'll hear it? Because I heard that they're holding all of the transcripts back from the media.
Well, yes. Right now, those transcripts from the sidebars on Saturday were sealed, which is amazing because nothing else really has been sealed since the beginning of this
interesting.
Case. So I don't know. Obviously, we could show up tomorrow, because sometimes things like this happen, and we show up the next day, and we sit there, and they start court like nothing ever happened. That could happen tomorrow. But, I really don't think we're looking at something just by the demeanor of everybody, it doesn't look like it was anything that, really set anybody off. And depositions were done on Saturday afternoon after the recess. So it looks like the case is still ongoing and moving forward.
Do you know who the depos were done with?
I do not know, but I do know that they were done, because I know that somebody was in a deposition on this case, a member of the prosecution, on Saturday afternoon. So,
hey, Michelle, on that note, if I could just weigh in for everybody,
Eric, go ahead,
Steve, and Lillian, is it, having been through the depo, and Michelle, as I told you, I'm in New York City. I'm actually shooting another television show, so I'm not able to be in Orlando at this point. But I did the depo via their internal video system, similar to Skype, and the tone of the depo was so heated and ugly. I mean, the state literally attacked. I was, thank God I had an attorney present in the room with the state in Florida, because they really, I was surprised at how aggressive they were and the research they had done on me via my blog. And they really came after me personally. And and I understand why they did it, Eric, and you can probably explain this. They did it to show Jose Baez, if you put this guy on the stand, we're going to use him against you. We're going to bring up the money thing. We're going to discredit you in front of the jury. We're going to show how everybody's paying for everything. And I was just like, I had my head in my hands. I was like, I do not want to be a part of this
circus. But do you think that they were hostile towards you during a deposition in the fact that you knew information, or do you think that they felt that you may have you may have information that would prove their case to be false?
Whose case? Who are you talking about?
The prosecution's. You would be called for the defense, correct?
I'm a defense witness. I'm on 24 hours. My brother's turning 50 next Saturday, and I've been told I can't leave the country. My brother lives in Canada. We have a party family, and I've been told I can't leave the country because I'm on the defense witness list, and I'm on 24 hours notice to be in Orlando. You know, so they're gonna use me as much as they would use any witness to muddy the waters. And listen, I'm gonna tell you right now. I'm going to go on the record and say, Jose Baez, as much as everybody's attacking him, he's not doing a horrible job. His job is to make, confuse the jury enough that
they're confused.
They can't convict her. They're confused. I'm confused. We're all confused.
I think the judge is confused.
He's not Jose Baez in his inexperience, and I like Jose. Don't get me wrong. He's not doing a horrible job. And listen, we're not going to. Well, I'll tell you one thing. We won't see the death penalty in this case. I'll bet everything I own on that.
No, I don't think we're not going to see the death penalty because of the defense and what they've done for their client. I think we're not going to see the death penalty because they would be idiots to do that in that state based on the fact that they have nothing to prove that she's done anything.
I'll say the least charge possible. That's what she's
exactly.
going to get. That jury's done. They're fed up. They're fed up with the circus. They've got families. They're going to give her the lesser charge possible because they painted this family to be so dysfunctional. We don't know if it was George, if it was Cindy, if it was Lee, if it was a combination of the above, if it was some stranger. The jury's fed up. They're going to get there.
We have a caller from the 309 area being patient with us. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Hi, yes. I had called back. But this kind of goes back a little bit to what you were talking about earlier. Cindy Anthony's testimony about the chloroform, and there was someone on the panel that was saying, well, you know, I'm surprised they didn't go after her for perjury. I'm surprised that they didn't quickly say, you know, whatever, that she was a liar, and I guess that's the public's opinion is that she's a liar. But in her deposition, she told them that she had looked up chlorofilm and it went to chloroform. So we don't know that she's lying on the stand and that she committed perjury if that's in the depositions. And I just wanted to bring that up to some attention.
Perjury is very hard to prove. And she was deposed and she said she did look up chlorofilm, and she said she did not look up how to make chloroform, but that she did look up chloroform and that she looked up hydrogen peroxide. And if that's in her deposition, they're going to have a very hard time of getting her for perjury. Now, everyone who's been watching the trial is going to sit there and say, why didn't this all come out during the state's case? Mm-hmm. Why didn't this come out, you know, earlier? And, you know, that's part of the problem. People think that she's lying. I don't know if she's lying or not. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt that when she swore, you know, to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, she meant it. And that's
she's lying. Body language wise, she sure showed a lot of tells that she was. The lip licking, the pursing, the shoulder shrugging, the all kinds of things.
She seemed very nervous.
What about the time card? Susie B in the chat room is asking about the time card. What do you make of the fact that if I was the prosecutor, if I was Linda Burdick, I would have gotten out of that courtroom that day and headed right over to that employer and had them pull that and have a subpoena in my hand so that I could put her back on the stand. They didn't do that. Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, we don't know if they haven't done that yet. And I would not be surprised if Linda Burdick sent an email to someone in her office, one of her investigators from the Metropolitan Bureau of Investigation, and said, go to that office and seize all the computers and get me her time records.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if they've done that. It's not their rebuttal case yet. And if they did get records that show she's at work and can show emails and all that, I think you're going to see that person come in their rebuttal case to say, look, here's an email that she sent. How can she be in two places at once?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we don't know what the state's done yet. And they all have computers there. They all have cell phones. And I can guarantee you, I can't guarantee you, but I would not be shocked if there was not an email or a text sent to someone, go here and get this.
Well, keep in mind that Jeff Ashton, right at the end of Cindy's testimony, he got up and left, and he was gone from the courtroom for about 35 minutes. So who knows who he was calling, texting, speaking with during that time.
Right. They're getting those records.
Yes.
Yeah,
that was
I
was Thursday.
Them.
That may be what came up, you know, Friday or, you know, Saturday morning. But see,
would that be a legal issue, though?
But perjury, you know, whether or not, you know, is the state going to say that the defense knew she was going to testify that and knew it was perjurious and they had an obligation to say something? But Cheney Mason.
But that was
the
day before. That wasn't yesterday.
Right. That was Thursday. And then did
so
they,
yesterday,
did they,
like you said, why wouldn't the judge have just called all the witnesses and then dealt with the issues at hand?
And whatever the issue at hand is, Cheney Mason is the one who approached the court and asked to go to sidebar. It was that the defense raised some issue, not the state.
Hmm. Anybody have any theories on that one?
No,
we're all lost for words.
Because Jeff Ashton got up there and ripped Baez a new butt for this other investigation, this other, you know, report that didn't include some information. Baez, you know, threw a temper tantrum. And then Cheney Mason said, Your Honor, there's something I'd like to discuss. Can we approach? We approached. We went to chambers for an hour. We came back. Court's in recess. What? It's very odd.
The whole thing is odd.
And I don't think
I mean, you know, from day one, even his opening remarks for the defendant, it was just, whoa. I think he, you know, he didn't hit us all with a smoking gun and blew us all away that way. He blew us away by something none of us expected. And still, how is he going to prove it all? And I think we asked you this last week, Eric. He needs to prove it all, or the jury's not going to trust him. Well, now all of a sudden, the judge even reprimanded him this week and said, where are you going with this? You know,
right.
So does this normally happen?
Typically, no. Typically, the defense doesn't throw their theory out in the opening statement like that.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, the defense isn't going to show. It's a game of poker. You know, it is a game in some ways. You're not going to show your hand. I still maintain the position I had last week. Maybe Baez gets up and says, you know what? She even lied. Or Mason gets up, whoever does the closing, says, you know what? She even lied to me.
Mm-hmm.
But just because she lied doesn't mean she's a killer.
Right. And you know what, Eric? They should have done that in their opening. I would have opened with that.
That would have, you could have, their opening should have been 30 to 45 minutes.
Yep.
What's reasonable doubt? Follow this. This is what the evidence is going to show. She's a liar. The evidence is going to show that she avoided telling people for 31 days.
But he did say that indirectly. He said, you know, the fictitious nanny, the nanny. He did say it in a very roundabout way. But you're right. He should have said it more directly.
And why do you go down the road of she drowned, George helped cover it up, George molested her, Lee tried to molest her? Why do you bring any of that up if you can't prove it?
Right, you know what? Yeah, you're digging your own grave.
But wait
that.
A minute, wait a minute.
You,
he might be able to prove. He may be able to prove it with River Cruz. Let me tell you why. This is back over a year ago. River Cruz told me, because I said, River, tell me what happened. What did he tell you happened? Did she kill the little girl? What happened? And she said, River Cruz said to me that George told her that it was, quote, unquote, an accident that snowballed. And I said, well, what kind of an accident? Did she give her too much chloroform? What happened? And she said he wouldn't say. He just said it was an accident gone that snowballed. Now, here I hear the snowball, or I hear the word accident again with Jose Baez's opening statement. So, you know, you kind of wonder there.
But that's anything.
Let's put your own parent in place there.
He's told a story from Casey, which is one of many. And, you know, in conversation, he's talking to her and he says, it must have been just an accident that spiraled out of control or snowballed out of control. And she twists it around, like the picture on her cell phone. One would make that, oh, they're out to dinner. That was at a vigil for Kaylee that she showed up,
right.
And he sat down and was the nice guy that he is and said hi to her. And somebody said, oh, you guys turn around, and they snapped a picture. But did
right.
that
but
come
the
out?
Details
no.
she told me, the details she told me about their interaction makes me think that they did have something going on.
And it was
Lillian, here's the problem with that. If George is going to break down and tell his mistress that story, why in hell would he not go to the state attorney's office, the prosecutors in this case, or the investigators in this case, and tell them that story? So we got one situation. The mistress is lying. George, she's going to perjure herself. George is lying to her, or it's not true. So it doesn't make
all
any sense.
All of his attorneys have already admitted, too, because, you know, they're all doing their media blitzes, that every one of them have come out and said they don't believe a thing Baia said about George in his opening. So not telling your attorney, that would be kind of stupid, too.
Well, but even if their attorney knows, even if George confessed, you know what, I did do this, what's their attorney going to do? Come out and say, you know what, Jose's right. He did molest his daughter. He's not.
Yeah.
He can't do that. He's gonna say all this is not true. George and Cindy didn't know anything about it. They're completely innocent. The problem I have is George was a former law enforcement officer. It doesn't make sense that you would let your daughter sit in jail for 3 years, facing first degree murder charges, facing the death penalty, if you knew all along it was an accident. Just go to the state and tell them.
And why would Jose allow it? Why would Jose keep on saying for 3 years that she needed her day in court?
Unless you had a dirty, dirty secret to hide.
Well, George is a very, very much the wimp type, manipulated by Cindy. Maybe she told him not to do something. He's a very timid kind of Casper Milquetoast type of guy. And so, you know, you can certainly understand why he wouldn't speak up.
Right, but let's go to the legal aspect of it. You know, it's one thing for, and I'm getting a 101 on defense attorneys these days on another case that we're working out here where the defense attorney won't say where a person's dead body is. So I guess they'll do anything to defend their client. But if you know it's an accident, why in the world would you keep it a secret and want her day in court just to trash everybody's life? Why wouldn't you just say it was an accident, let's take the 10-year deal, and let's move on?
Because the book deals aren't as good?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what?
Beautifully said.
I love it.
Yes.
I love it. We're now looking at American Idol, you know, American Murder meets American Idol. This is a window. You know, really, honestly, is this a window?
That's brilliant.
Well, you know what? I mean, really, like everyone says, oh, we've got this great window into our justice system with the internet. Is it really a window in our justice system or a mirror into like how we turned murder children into entertainment? I mean, to me, as someone who's covered cases since I got out of college, this is despicable what we've done here. And, you know, no disrespect to Steve or, you know, and what I've seen, but I mean, we're paying people to tell stories about murdered children. It's really awful.
Well, I'm going to address that one because it's very important that I do. People magazine has not only – we've never paid a dime to anybody for this story, and that includes licensing pictures, that includes interviews, that includes photo shoots. I can guarantee you this, and I will just let you know this, that any implication that we spent any money on this story other than to pay my salary is false.
I didn't mean
that. I just want
to
get that out there because –
Oh, wait, didn't you pay for my writ stay? I swear people paid for that.
I don't even pay for my writ stay, so they're not going to pay for yours.
They won't even
just
send me a car, damn it.
The most that I think I've ever paid – actually, that is not true. On the very first day, I took Jose Baez out to lunch, and I think it cost us $13.
Yeah, but,
so
see,
I did pay
that. That's SOP. That's standard operating procedure, and I'm not going to get you on that. And I didn't mean you any disrespect like you.
No, I just wanted to get that out there because the rumors
have
been there for years, and I just
wanted to
be clear.
No, but I see what you're saying. You know, we've had a former spokesperson
that
the Anthony's still have yet to meet, Larry Garrison. And, Steph, I'll let you go off on him in a minute. But, you know, he was let go. And when I came on board, I was working with the Anthony's. I never got paid a cent. I never put them on the air and got paid for that, or they got paid, or photos got paid for. So it was like, why is everyone getting paid to find justice and find Kaylee? And so for me, it's very hard to swallow that even the attorneys that have come on board, you know, to market to Dateline or Primetime, I forget which one it was, for $20,000 and then pay for that and then leave the Anthonys so that they're into a new attorney. I don't get that. I just don't get that. You know what you're coming into. This family has no money. And
I agree with you. They're in foreclosure. And, Eric, you know, my question to you, Eric, this is Steph. What I'd like to ask you is how could Jose Baez not be disbarred before this trial when he admitted he brokered a deal with ABC and received $200,000? I still don't get how he was able to proceed legally and try this case.
You know, I don't know if the Florida Bar has completed its investigation. You know, part of the issue is because he brokered that deal and got money to fund the defense, does that mean that he has an interest in the outcome of the case? I mean, most of the times you see that in a personal injury case where there's an issue like that. You know, 48 Hours did a huge special inside, you know, Kate, whatever it was called, where they hired a mock jury to do a mock jury and showed the evidence to come back, you know, and say, oh, not guilty. You know, the bottom line is you've got a million, you know, tabloid magazines, TV shows that will pay anyone anything to get whatever they want. And during the prosecution's case in chief, some of Casey's friends
admitted.
Unless
it's the truth.
Absolutely.
Don't see too many people take it. You've got Leonard Padilla doing a media blitz campaign for 3 years, and they keep him on there, and half of the crap that comes out of his mouth is a lie. Or it's going to be true because all of a sudden things happen, like Blanchard Park or, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, how can you count them as reputable sources to put on, or people down the street that never really knew the Anthonys but got paid $20,000 from the Inquirer for their story, and now all of a sudden they're an expert? What are you? That cracks me up.
And that's why you saw the defense attack some of the prosecution's witnesses and Casey's friends that sold their stories or sold their pictures. Mm-hmm. Everyone is in this to try and make a buck. Mm-hmm. And fortunately...
You know what, Eric? It wasn't like that from the beginning, because I'll tell you something, and a lot of people don't know this. I was the one that got those club pictures of Casey partying in the club.
Mm-hmm.
Her DJ friend gave me those pictures when I was with Fox News. We didn't pay a dime for them. He never asked me for any money. Cindy and George never asked me for any money. All the times I spoke with them, I paid for their dinners. You know, that's how we do it. Steve understands this. They never, ever asked for a dime. And I have to go on the record and say, regardless of what we've seen in the press about those two, I like Cindy and George. They've been very kind to me. They were nice people who got caught up in the situation. And I don't care what goes on behind closed doors. None of my business. They never asked me for a dime.
George and Cindy were
nice. And I agree with you, Steph.
George and Cindy were out at dinner last night trying to enjoy a Saturday night having dinner, and I know this from a friend who told me, and they were approached at dinner about the case.
Oh,
I mean,
they always are.
Anywhere.
We could never go out to eat without anybody coming up, treating us to dinner or anything.
Right. So, you know, they've got all their dirty laundry being aired in front of the world, and then they can't even go out on a Saturday night in Orlando to get dinner. But I think
let me
come
tell
back
you guys,
to, you know, go ahead.
No, I'll go on the record and say, listen, if it was me and my dirty laundry was going to be aired in that case, I would be horrified, as probably all you would be. So I feel for them, because you know what we do in our own personal life is our own business. Do you want to? If George is having an affair, maybe Cindy knows. Who cares? I feel for them. I think it's horrible, and it's detrimental.
I would think there's like HIPAA laws, Eric, out there. Aren't there like HIPAA laws or something? Because I'll tell you, we knew more about why George went to the hospital on the suicide attempt, and we know now some of us never told anybody, but yet now the prosecution says, are you on a new medication? Well, isn't there something that she's not allowed to do that?
I don't know if that would per se violate the HIPAA law. You know, she didn't say what medication. She didn't say what the medication was for. She hinted around that it had to do with memory. I'd be a little taken back if I was Cindy, but then again, I'm sure what medications are you on? What were you on? Is all in her deposition, and it's out there.
Interesting. I can tell you, once she got off the stand, I've never, you know, it's been bad enough. You see things on the internet and such about Casey. You know, they had a whole website designed for hanging Casey, burning her, and all of this, and very sad. But as soon as Cindy got off the stand the first time a few days ago, oh my goodness, they've changed support group names. They're bashing her. It's just horrible, and I shake my finger at Facebook for allowing it.
With all due respect, people can't stand lying, and they feel that she's lied, whether she has or she hasn't. She sure came across. One of the biggest crimes to do in society is to lie. People don't like a liar. And, you know, look what happened with Clinton. You know, it was the lying that people were so opposed to. This doesn't work. And so that's what people are violent. I mean, I'm getting hundreds and hundreds of hits by the minute, basically, about my blog, talking about really telling how horrible she is because she's a dirty liar. That's what they're saying.
That's why I felt bad for Steve, because maybe you haven't seen the post, but I announced you were going to be on the show, and of course I've been using the cover to promote tonight's show, and people would say, I'm not wasting 1 minute listening to that, nor will I buy the magazine. This is ludicrous. But you have good points.
Michelle, let me stand up in Steve's defense, and Steve and I have never met. I think the questions that People Magazine asks are really smart. Is she getting away with murder? They did a great profile on who is the jury, the best that they could do. I think People Magazine is doing probably some of the best reporting on this case. And what's interesting about this case, for those of us who covered O.J., now, you know, we used to take the witch to the middle of the town to hang her or burn her. Now the witch is, you know, online, and we're in a worldwide community of witch burners, and it's horrible what's happened in this case. And the lines between the truth and rumors, because the rumors can become so huge and so powerful, it's overwhelming in this case, and I've never seen anything like it in all my years of reporting.
Well, you know,
one of the chat room people asked how I got involved, and in July, I reached out to them when I saw what the media had been doing to them, and I said if I could help in any way. By the end of July of 2008, I was working with the web designer and working on the web and technology aspect of things and cleaning up what was out there on Casey's personal sites as well. And when Larry Garrison was let go, I was brought out to help the Anthonys keep Kaylee's face and case visible. I truly believed that Kaylee was alive because of the evidence I was shown and because of the evidence I wasn't being shown. And I don't believe for a minute, and that's why I played that 911 tape in the intro. I don't believe for a minute that Cindy and George ever doubted that Kaylee had still been alive until December 11th, and I truly believe that, and nobody can show otherwise unless they can prove that. But with that, you know, I had people, my whole reputation went down the toilet just because I was having a voice for Kaylee Anthony, and people started websites. My company was Helping Heroes with OES. They called it OS with no E and took out email accounts, mbart@helpingheroes.com, and smearing George and Cindy as it was me doing it, that they owed me $18,000 and I gave them this and I gave them that. And it was like, that's not me. And there's nothing you can do. There is nothing you can do once it's out there. And so I feel their pain. I truly do.
Michelle, it shows you that how the public cannot stand somebody who's not likable, who's not coming clean to them, who's not straightforward, who is defending Casey at all.
I never defended Casey. I'm only defending, and I think Steve and Steph.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about Cindy. And
oh, yeah.
Why people react horribly. And you kind of got caught into the stink of Cindy, so to speak, because you had the smell on you simply because you were associated with her. And that's really what that was about.
Well, and you know, I side with what Steph is saying. You know, I spent a lot of time, almost 15 hours a day with that family, and for 3 months. So, you know, when you hear Padilla, and he was in that house for 2 days. People think he was out there for like 3, 4, 5 months or something. He was in that house for 2 hours before he got kicked out and never invited back in. And he was there only 9 days. And yet everybody thinks he knows the Anthonys. He doesn't know diddly squat about the Anthonys. And so that's when I get defensive because, yeah, I'm going to defend people that I truly – I don't know Casey. I've talked to Casey. I've never met her personally. But if everything that she's done is true, I'll side with Cindy and say we'll be the first to convict her. And Cindy
you know
has been
sad?
Put on the record of saying that. But
you know
she
sad?
Is a
There's
mother, and I can't say – you know, if she's lying or not on the stand, but I can tell you that George and Cindy are not the animals people have made them out to be because she's trying to watch her daughter go to death.
But remember, Cindy testified yeah. that up until 6 weeks before the start of this trial, she still thought Kaylee was alive.
Yes. Something changed. And here's what's sad.
People hate that. People hate
per
that.
Year, right now there's 614,925,000 missing children. Only 100 of those on average turn up dead. It's really dangerous when we're obsessed with one case, when there's so many other cases going on and perps are behind our backs continually performing hideous acts on children and murdering children. You know, I'm working on a show right now where I'm out in the field covering missing persons cases. And it's dangerous, I think, guys, and we all agree. When you focus on one case and we're all over here, something shiny over here when there's so much going on behind our backs.
I agree.
Right.
And it's a prime example. I love CNN. I love In Session, HLN, all of that. But it's a prime example that if you have the power to stay on the air 24/7 and cover this case and have your Monday through Friday anchor women and men serving during the weekend as well, then – why don't we do that for all the other missing children?
Mm-hmm. Headline News has turned into the Casey Anthony Network.
Yeah, because Casey Anthony draws people. I mean, you know, I've always gotten a lot of blog hits, but I can't believe what I've gotten since this case has happened. People are starving. They're hungry, and they want a way to vent. They want a way to communicate. And this is a very interesting case. It's a case about a very attractive young lady who you would never think would do anything like this. It's a dynamic between a mother and a daughter, a dynamic between a daughter and a father, a husband and a wife, a sister and a brother. So there's so many elements that affect so many people. The grandparents out there can relate to the Anthonys as grandparents. The people who are looking, who have young children, relate to, I could never do that to my child. So there's so many people that are caught up in this because it speaks to everyone.
And there are people that are following it just to see and are making fun of Jose Baez and the defense team.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of easy, though, Eric. I'm sorry.
I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but I'm just saying you've got
you know,
people out
I mean,
there that...
I truly believe if Mark Aragos was in that room or Gloria Allred, Lisa Bloom, I completely believe that so much more that Jose wants to enter into evidence would be allowed, and it should be allowed. Everything that defense can get into evidence should be allowed if it means that they can show reasonable doubt that she didn't kill this child before we switched the switch on, you know?
Michelle, with all due respect, I covered the Scott Peterson case and Mark Aragos lost that case, you know, showed up half the time hungover, was having affairs with half the people that were in the court, and honestly did not do that great of a job.
And I want to go on the record as saying this is Steph Watts' opinion and not the opinion of Voices for Justice.
If it's Steph Watts' opinion, I buy it because I believe Steph Watts. He's the best. He's a true journalist.
I'm a proponent of cameras in the courtroom. I think it's a great educational tool.
Mm-hmm.
If you took the cameras out of this courtroom, you took the internet out of this courtroom, you took Twitter out, you took Facebook out, the blogs, blah, 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 would this case be done? How much time would this case
be? In the public perception, it would be.
But, I mean, in reality, I mean, how much of this is just grandstanding by the defense, by the state? in these, some of these arguments and some of this stuff is just grandstanding to try and make a name for yourself as opposed to doing what's right for the defendant or doing what's right for the state.
That's a good point. Does the media, I guess CNN, Turner Broadcasting, or any of the other local networks, do they pay to be allowed in there to run their cameras?
It's a pool. I'll tell you how it's done because I used to work at the networks. It's a pool camera,
right.
One camera, and then the networks pay to share the feed line in. So there's one camera, and everybody shares the cost of that camera. But my question is to Steve. Steve, how much are you guys at People Magazine focused on getting the juror? Because you know the jurors are the get. After this case over, the jurors are the get. How much have you guys strategized on how to get the jurors? I'm really curious about that.
I haven't even begun to think of that, to be perfectly honest. There's another big get in this story that has nothing to do with the jurors, and everybody wants to be the first one to talk to Casey Anthony. That's where I'm focusing my
that's $1 million. I've already told the defense that she can't speak to anybody unless we have a price tag of $1 million. Oh,
well,
I shouldn't have said anything.
I've already got the excuse of Casey Anthony interview. I've already locked it in. Steph Watts, the freelance journalist.
I mean, the jurors are going to be interesting.
She's doing it for free.
What's that?
She won't be doing it for free.
Well, no, she won't be. And that, you know, obviously my job is to try and convince her to do it for free, which is, you know, like, you know, trying to convince the wind to stop blowing. But, you know, in general, I mean, the jurors, it will be interesting to hear their take on it. But usually that is not done in a print type of forum. That's usually done in something where you see with Dateline where, you know,
mm-hmm.
6, 8, 10 of them are sitting there. And
they stick as a group, like the miners, you know, the coal miners.
Exactly.
So do you see the jury selling their story, too, to be interviewed?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I would hope not. I mean, it would certainly be symptomatic with this case. It would make me sad if I saw that. I would hope. I don't think I have a problem with the jurors talking at all. I would hope that they wouldn't. You know, my concern from the beginning has always been that there's people that have gotten themselves onto this case to be jurors, to be on this case and be jurors, so that they can go and write a book. I think that's, and Eric, you'll probably agree with me. People
Absolutely.
Want to be on these high-profile cases. It's mm-hmm. always a concern. You know, they can do what you can, as an attorney, can question me a million ways. I can lie to your face to get on your jury to convict or not convict, you know, a client. So it's that's always been my concern. But I would hope that this jury it's not the case with this jury.
Well, frankly, I would love
to be a fly on the wall when that jury is charged and is sent back with the case and they all jockey to determine who's going to be the foreperson.
It's going to be a long deliberation. I'll go on the record and say it's going to go long.
Yeah, let's
go
take a panel.
Jury number four.
That person, that's
for
sure.
So
let's go around
person.
Here and ask each of you, there's four of you on the line. You don't have to say, but how long do you think they will deliberate? Steph?
Gosh, you know, it's interesting. I just came off another case in Florida. I covered Joe Francis, Girls Gone Wild, completely different situation. But he was up, you know, child molestation charges, photographing women underage. He had a jury of 12 conservative women. They went on for 17 hours, they deliberated, came back in Joe's favor, gave the girls nothing. I think we're going to see a long, long deliberation. But let's keep in mind, they've been sequestered for a month, so I'm trying to weigh those two factors. I think that once they go in, they're going to stay in until they get a verdict. That period continually is going to be a long period. They're going to come out. It's going to be a late, late, late night verdict.
Eric?
All right, I'm going to give you the typical defense attorney answer. It depends. And it's going to depend on a couple of things.
What the hell is the kind of answer is that?
Well, when do they get the case? Do they get the case on July 2nd?
Mm-hmm.
And they're pressed up against, hey, you know what? I want to get home for July 4th. This has been going on for 6 weeks of hell. I want to see my family. Or do they get the case on July 5th? If they get the case.
And you know what, Eric? That's a good
point. And then they'll be ticked off
and the best point that he's just raised.
Right.
Because you don't want to press the jury. That's a great point. And I would give it to them on the 5th. Because you give it to them, they're going to squeeze it. I want to get the hell out of here. want to see my family, and you're not going to get the verdict that they deserve.
And
right?
I think
that's
it's,
but the judge has already promised that they'd be home by the 4th. Why would
you
the judge
promise
have promised
that?
Can't promise
you can't
and
promise
I think,
that. That's a huge mistake on the part of the judge.
And I think what the judge has to do, if they don't get that case by July 4th, whatever it costs, you need to bring all their families over.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have a special July 4th barbecue, whatever.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
You need to make them
mm-hmm.
as comfortable
right.
as possible, because if you give,
that's
if you rush
point.
Everyone to give them this case on the
yep.
second, you're going to get a defense-friendly verdict.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with
that.
And you know what? We don't know
think,
what the judge is saying to the jury behind closed doors. He's pep-talking them, I'm sure. Guys, hang in there. This is a big case. You know, they know the stakes are high. They're not stupid. They know we're all
right.
out there obsessed with this case.
Dr. Black,
exactly.
What do you think?
Yeah,
I think they're not going to be thinking about their families and I want to hurry up and get this over. I think this is so high profile, and the rigor that they went through when they were questioned to be a juror, they are taking this really seriously. And they even
mm-hmm.
asked the judge about a question already, and they weren't even in the jury room yet, so to have something explained. So I think that they are going to take as long as it takes. I think they're going to be meticulous. They're going to go through every piece of evidence. There may be somebody on there that will say no. I think jury number 4 is somebody that is going
right.
to be problematic for many of the other jurors. She may not for other group, but that there will be a lot of massaging, convincing, a lot of tempers, a lot of tears. I think it's going to go an incredibly long time.
I need to, first of all, stand up in Juror 4's defense, because I'm sitting there watching her every day. And, you know, she has become a boogeyman for some reason in this case. And everybody thinks she's the one that's going to vote to acquit. She's the one. No, I don't see that. I don't see anything like that. What I see
Why?
Is I see
yeah.
a woman who, when she hears about Casey's lies, she shakes her head. When she hears Casey saying the F word again and again and again, she looks like she's being slapped across the face. She's taking notes more during the defense than during
mm-hmm.
the prosecution, which everybody's making a big deal about, but
right.
she might feel like the defense has something more to prove. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go there with this. I do think that there's some latent racism in the idea that a black woman is, and the only black woman on the defense, is never going to vote to convict. It's insulting, and it's insulting to juror number 4, who I think is doing a phenomenal
job. Too.
Hey, Michelle, can I ask a quick question to Eric? Eric, if they come back as a hung jury, how much do you think Judge Perry is going to push them to go back and re-deliberate?
He's got to do it at least once. I think he's going to push them hard, and
mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he's just gonna say, "Oh, hung jury, okay, we're done."
What is number 4's Eric? What is number 4's occupation and history? If everyone thinks she may cause a hung jury,
I've got to be honest with you. I'm not 100% sure.
I know the answer to that.
You know,
oh, okay.
I haven't been following the jurors, to be honest with you.
She's a 46-year-old African-American woman who lives alone. She's single. She has worked different types of support type of jobs. Nothing. She's not a professional. The only reason why she's become the scary person that she's become is that in jury selection, she said that she does not like to judge people based on what other people say about them.
Ooh,
that was
good.
Her phrase. So the prosecution wanted her tossed off, but the defense wanted to keep her. But
is she religious?
What's that?
Is she religious?
She's probably
yes, she
religious.
Is. She is religious. She is a member of a...
Which could explain the shaking of the head.
What's
you
that?
Know, during curse words and
death,
things like that.
She's not given the death penalty, I'll tell you that much.
Well,
religious.
Yeah, and neither is juror number 2, neither is juror number 11, or 12, excuse me. There are a few of them that are not death penalty that don't think that they would want to do that. So,
well, jury number 4, juror number 4, for instance, like somebody in the chat room is indicating, yeah, a racial issue. If you think, okay, she's a single black woman at home, and you know she's not going to give the death penalty, but she knows what it's like to be judged on something that's not true just because of her color. So chances are she's going to be more open-minded to show me the facts before I prosecute this girl. And so I would have to side with you. I don't think she's as much problem as everybody makes her out to be.
I think that the facts of this case will speak for themselves, and I do think that anybody who goes into it with a good attitude, whatever you want to say, will look at the case for what it is, and I think that's what she indicated that she would do, and there's no reason to think that she won't.
You know, and again,
we have
15 minutes
left for any of the people that might want to call in with questions of our panel. The number is 347-838-8622. We are honored to have Dr. Lillian Glass with us, Eric Dubois, investigative reporter Steph Watts, and from People Magazine, we have Steve Helling. So come on and give us a call. They'll be happy to answer your questions. We do have a few minutes, like I said, left. What do we expect this week? Let's start with the attorney. Eric? What should we expect starting tomorrow morning?
Really? This case? You're asking me to predict this case? Come on, Michelle.
Get out your crystal ball, Eric.
Right. The defense resting and the state rebutting? I have no clue. I mean, I think tomorrow morning is going to be huge. You know, hopefully the world will find out what this quote-unquote legal issue was, and it may be nothing. It may be huge. I doubt we're going to see Jose Baez or Chaney Mason not sitting at the defense table. I doubt there's going to be a mistrial. I think you may see some bombshell, you know, ace in the hole type witnesses for the defense. You know, some obviously Roy Kronk's got to take the stand.
That's going to be the highlight. He's the big one.
Right. I think you've got three big ones still waiting.
I think Jim Hoover is the defense's smoking gun, though. That's just my prediction.
I think you've got Jim Hoover, and then I think you're going to have Roy Kronk. I think you're going to have Yuri Melich. You may have the canine. You know, no one's come in from Texas EquiSearch to talk about the area that they've searched.
Right,
you know,
and Tim told me. I talked to Tim Miller tonight. He said he's on 3 days' notice and has not received notice as of tonight. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Eric, we're not going to even see him Wednesday. He said they've got to give him 3 days. And between me, all of us, and everybody who's listening, Tim's health is not good, and he's been having a lot of health issues, been in and out of the hospital. He told me he may not even be able to testify because of his health issues. So that's another interesting point.
The defense has to establish that the body wasn't there. And there's only a few people that can do that. Jim Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Kronk, who called and said it was there, Jim Hoover and
Dominic Casey,
who went out and inspected the area and didn't see anything.
The police officer that was fired.
Exactly. The canine that came out there and swept the area and didn't smell.
The psychic, Tim Miller.
I don't know if you call the psychic. I think that's a
strong. No.
I wouldn't call her.
That's crazy.
That's a death. Hey, right. Michelle,
you know,
I have a question in the
chat room. Somebody's asking, and I always wondered this too, who gave the approval that what was allowed and what wasn't able to be released to the media? As far, I know you have the Sunshine Law and all of that stuff, but who approves what goes out and what doesn't?
In terms of?
Well, we know that they didn't release everything.
I think that's
because if they had, they would have released a lot of the witnesses in the beginning, their affidavits and statements, the sketches that they did of possible other suspects, which they never released, phone call records that we know exist that obviously the defense called into question this week.
I think most of that, I think the cell phone, all the discovery, I think was released, because I remember living here. I mean, there were huge waves of, you know, another 1,500 pages of, you know, discovery was released today. But I think in terms of what was released at the beginning with regards to the investigation, that was all controlled by law enforcement.
What about the interviews?
The
deposition? Not all the interviews were released.
Right. Well, I think is depending on what the state wants to use. You know, if the state's going to use it as evidence or the defense is going to use it as evidence, and that's, you know, supplied in discovery, and that stuff's going to be out. But
and Michelle, remember at the beginning when I released the phone records, the detailed phone records of the flurry of phone calls that were made between when Casey Anthony's cell phone, I got those from Lee Anthony, remember, Lee Anthony was doing a very detailed investigation on his own parallel to the police. The police were upset with me, and I remember I had a conversation with them because they brought me into the station about where I got this information, and I said, listen, I got it from Lee because I reported it on Greta's show. Lee Anthony gave me the phone records. We verified the phone records, and I went over the detailed flurry of phone calls. So, you know, Lee Anthony at the beginning was giving out a lot of information, you know, and I think that they took, you know, set precedence, and they were like, screw it, we're just going to release everything.
Here's something that hasn't been addressed. Where's Casey Anthony's second cell phone?
I was going to ask, is that why Richard Grun's being called? I always found it odd that Richard Grun bought her a phone and paid for that bill, and yet none of those records were ever released, and he admitted that on Nancy Grace. So,
well, there's two things to that, Eric. Either it means there's nothing there, there's nothing of interest there. Well, there shouldn't, two things. That's probably the main thing. Either there's nothing of interest or it's a bombshell, and we're going to have information about that this week.
Right. But in the state's case, they made a big deal that that was another lie. There really wasn't a second cell phone. So if the defense
was a second cell phone because Richard Grun admitted it on Nancy Grace on live television.
But throughout the state's case, when Yuri Melich was on the stand, I believe he testified. You know, Casey kept saying there was a second phone and no one could find it. You know, so that was just another one of these, you know, made up stories.
So if Grun comes in
and says, I paid for that second cell phone. I gave him the number. I don't know where this information is.
Eric, you know what's been interesting in this case, and Lily and Steve, you guys will agree with me on this, I think, is that during the Scott Peterson case, remember, two main interviews came into evidence, which was Diane Sawyer's interview with Steve, or with, what's his name, and also Gloria Gomez's. She was a young reporter, also interviewed Peterson. And in this case, we haven't seen any contradictory statements from Cindy George. Of course, Casey was smart enough to not do any interviews. Actually brought in to court, brought into evidence. I thought that was interesting because I really thought that was going to be a big part of this case, as it was in Peterson. But again, it was Scott Peterson who spoke directly to Diane Sawyer and Gloria Gomez in contradictory statements that he said in other areas.
Right. I mean, I don't recall George or Cindy making anything, you know, to them, that she was always kidnapped. It was always, you know, Zanny the nanny, or the child was missing and, you know, taken. There was never anything that they did.
And that was the defense up until recently.
Well,
even from the defense attorneys, they admitted that up until recently.
Which is where I think they made a mistake, or they're going to get up there and say, she even lied to us, but that doesn't make her a murderer.
Well, I think the closest they got to that was with me, and where they thought she had told me something different. They thought I had reported something different about the ladder, and then in my depot, it kind of like was a bit of a bust because that wasn't the case. So I think that's about as close as it came in this case. But
there's a lot of hearsay entered into evidence, which is kind of ironic that we're going to listen to hearsay in order to convict somebody on a capital case.
But just real briefly, because I know we're almost out of time. What we haven't talked about are the pictures that came in this week that showed Kaylee being able to open a door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was huge. I thought that was huge.
Her being able to climb the steps.
Huge.
You know, I mean, those are, that creates doubt. That
huge.
It does, but then from a defense standpoint, I would say, well, she also knew that she needed her vest on. And if she was going to go out the door with Cindy, with George and Casey at home, that day, she would have put on the vest. The dogs would have barked when she opened the screen door. She would have got in the pool. They would have heard a splash because George was right there. So to say that she did all of that and didn't put on her vest, and all of a sudden, you know, this is the situation. It's too far-fetched. It's an accident.
It's far-fetched, yes. But for the defense to be able to get those pictures in and get that video in of Casey playing with Kaylee, laying on the ground, laughing, that shows a loving, caring mother who loved her daughter and played, and, you know, they had a great relationship. And, you know,
those pictures created a lot of doubt. They created enough doubt for a jury not to convict. I didn't even realize how mature young Kaylee was with that picture of her opening the door. I think that's a great point, Eric.
She's very tall.
She was very tall for her age. If a juror like juror number four or someone wants something to hang their hat on, I think the defense gave it to him this week.
Yep, I agree. And then you got the story about the pool ladder, whether or not it's true, it was let down by accident. This was a horrible accident gone wrong, covered up. Sorry, reasonable doubt. Mm-mm.
What about Dr. Glass? What about Casey's demeanor when, you know, we've seen her break down just a couple times in 5 weeks, but we saw her really break down when Lee Anthony was talking about how mad he was at his parents for not telling him about the birth. It almost appeared as if this person was in love with her brother.
Michelle. It was. She was kind of mimicking his tears. It really did feel that way. But Casey, if you watch when Cindy cries, she tries to mimic the tears. She's not really feeling it. She's really not feeling that emotion. She's wiping away non-tears. She's looking at it, examining it. This isn't crying.
Yeah. No. That's why I like having you on. This adds some clarity to what I'm seeing. It's like, what the heck is that? Why is he crying like that?
We like to think she is, but it wasn't. It was, you know, Lee's crying, so she's going to mimic those tears. And then immediately it stops. That's not what happens when you cry. When you cry, you have a facial expression that shows grief. The jaw gets lower, sides of your lips go down. None of that went down. All it is she's wiping some non-tear, some nothing under her eye and staring at it. So this is what's upsetting people. And the more the jury is probably observing this, they're getting annoyed with it too, just like the public at home is.
Mm-hmm. When Eric or Steve, when will we see the letter that George wrote when he was going to commit suicide? When will we see that release? Somebody's asking in the chat room.
Irrelevant.
Yeah,
irrelevant.
I just answered it. I don't think it's relevant at all.
No.
And the only person that could really bring it in would be George Anthony himself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what relevance that has at all to this case, unless in the suicide note it says, "I can't believe I helped cover this up. I don't know what I did."
Well, exactly.
It's not going to say that.
Okay.
Well, the last thoughts are that it will be interesting to see what happens tomorrow morning, because that will change everything. And it will also be interesting to see River Cruz if she does testify. And it will be fascinating, and I will be watching like a hawk if George comes on. I will be scrutinizing everything he does and says, and hopefully be on your show again to talk about it.
You're welcome, Don, anytime. I try not to overwhelm the guests that we invite, but there are some of you that, you know, you just have a different perspective on things that open up the minds of our listeners and my mind for that matter. So you're welcome, Don, anytime. Steve, do we see another cover coming out on this trial?
Probably, but probably not this week, because, you know, we have to wait for something to happen. I think that probably the next big story that we're looking at is when there's a verdict that comes in. I mean, that's really, you know, what everybody's waiting for right now. You know, and unless something huge happens, like Britney Spears walks in tomorrow and says, "Yeah, actually, it was me," then it will be a cover right away.
I don't think she was in town.
Well, so much for that.
Sorry.
Did we see Lindsay Lohan playing Casey Anthony in the film?
Well, you know,
No, because she can't show up for work on time.
Well, there's part of me that's like, that's not bad, actually. So
she can't leave her house.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is one of those cases that you never know what's going to happen. Tomorrow, everything could change, and the next thing you know, I'm writing a cover story. It just, you just don't know.
It is definitely interesting. And, Eric, any last thoughts? I'm going to let Steph rant and rave when we close the show.
Yay, Steph.
I think, as we've said, always hold on to your seats, because God knows where this is going.
Have the seatbelt fastened.
Exactly. Put your tray table
Steph,
up.
You're on.
Well, you know, I'm a I'm a loudmouth and opinionated, but my feeling is this case saddens me because I appreciate the fact that we have all these mediums to have a window into the justice system, but I just feel like the behavior of the public fighting outside the courtroom, and the media's constant obsession with this case. And listen, I think Steve's done a great job. I respect People Magazine. I think Dr. Lillian Glass has done a great job. I try to keep it, you know, in the middle, and I've been put in a really uncomfortable position because I was a witness in the case, and I did not ever want to be in this position. No journalist does. But just our behavior around this case, our obsession with this case, when, as I said before, there's 16,000 other missing persons cases. There's so much else going on. That's my concern. I appreciate the coverage. However, I'm concerned with the obsession and the precedent it sets for other people looking at this case and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe I can become famous by murdering my daughter and I can get on TV and sell a book deal and have Dr. Logan Glass and Steve from People Magazine do a cover story on me. That's what concerns me about this case. Are we setting a precedent for people to commit murder to become famous?
Do you think we've seen any copycats now that you've mentioned it? Because I know that there's been a couple cases after Kaylee's remains were found. It seemed as one story comes to mind.
Haley Cummings?
Say that again.
The Haley Cummings case?
Right.
Well, yeah, but not so much hers. There was one other case where a mother... I think it was here in the Northwest, did something similar to the same case that we're dealing with in Orlando.
Well,
and I'm just wondering if you think there might be an avenue for copycats to be like Casey Anthony.
Well, here's the sad part, Michelle. If there is copycat cases and they don't get the notoriety, they don't get the attention this case is getting, then it happens in vain. So it could very well be happening. And you know what? We're too busy focusing on this case to even notice.
Mm-hmm.
I hope for everyone's sake there aren't copycat cases, 'cause
I hope so too. Well, thank you to all of our guests this evening, and we will be back on for a recap of week 6 coming up. Please, if you haven't listened to the past shows, get updated on the past weeks by downloading the other podcasts from the previous shows. And again, thank you to all of you for coming on, and you're welcome back anytime to shed light on this case, because I think
even
we're all kind of confused. But until we look to the, you know, verdict and things of that nature, I think we all just have to keep having our voice and use it for Kaylee Anthony, because in this instant, she was the victim here, and we need to keep remembering that. So thank you all, and I'm going to close with Miss Kaylee Marie Anthony singing on Father's Day 2008. Thank you, everyone.
Have a good night.
Thank you, guys. Good night.
Justice. Keep using your voice to have that voice for Kaylee Marie and other things that matter. Good night.